It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Ryan, it's the best time of the year, as I always like to start the show with, but you want to know why, in particular, it's the best time of the year.
Why?
We are so close to never having to watch the New York Islanders play playoff hockey for another calendar year. It is the best. We can watch actual fun offensive hockey. It's going to be great. We're going to get to that in a bit.
Okay.
We might as well just kick off with, you know, the new and improved, it was 4-1.
Yes.
The Toronto Maple Leafs.
It was 4-1 2.0.
The Toronto Maple Leafs have done the impossible, I think, going into Tampa. Not only have they snatched victory from the jaws of defeat, which is, I think, the personification of that phrase with what they've done, considering how bad they've played up until maybe the last like 10 minutes of the third period in both games. It is that they've taken two games from Tampa, and they have done it in just spectacular fashion, and they managed to make Alex Kerfoot a hero. I mean, are we looking at the Toronto Maple Leafs potentially slaying the Demons, getting the second round? Are these Leafs different?
I feel like they have broken through. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you got to win four games.
Yes.
They've only won three. And, I mean, this is an experienced Tampa Bay team. Having said that, it's also a severely banged up Lightning squad.
Yep.
And that's kind of a shame to me in this series is that, you know, we haven't seen the Bolts at full strength. And really, I mean, they've succeeded in the past with some pretty bad injuries as well. You know, Stamkos missing almost an entire
run.
Yeah, save for like one shift.
Kucherov suspended a bunch.
Braden Point has been out in the past and is obviously banged up now. But having said that, it's fascinating to see the Leafs make these comebacks when they haven't been playing fantastic hockey. You know, the fact that Austin Matthews had a game where, you know, he came through in the clutch. I don't think he's been playing bad per se, but,
no, but
you know, that sort of killer instinct where you get those late goals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Morgan Rielly you can put into that category as well where, you know, I'd say it's been an up and down series for him just in terms of some of the defensive plays, but then coming through on offense. I really do think that the guys like Ryan O'Reilly and Olachary, you know, the experience they bring and the attitude they bring, you know, maybe it's not, well, it did show up on the score sheet with O'Reilly.
And Achari. He scored.
And Achari for that matter.
He scored in both of them, or not O'Reilly, but they both scored in both games.
There you go. So, I mean, they're having that impact, but also just that attitude of, we can do this. It's pretty amazing. Shout out to my wife. It was 4-1.
Shout out to Ryan's wife,
Shout
man.
Out to Ryan's wife.
Yeah.
It was 4-1 last night. I'm like, it's over. And she's like, well, how much time is left? I'm like, it's the end of the second period. She's like, well, they have time. And sure enough, she was right. So there you go.
Ryan, does your wife have the passion?
I was going to say, like, I was joking to her. I was like, do you have hot takes in you? And she was like, no, I don't want to do any.
Well, it's funny, it's like, so you were talking with your wife, and something that is, you know, I just innocuously shared on social media is that people are loving my mom's commentary on these games. I'm not sure if you've seen that.
I have seen that. It's pretty good.
So she is, this, yesterday was maybe her third ever hockey game watching in her life, and that includes the hockey games I was part of as a child. And my favorite is that she, like, she's just very blunt in that, like, these guys have a job to do, and if they're losing, they're not doing their job, and I just don't understand that.
Yeah.
But she did come up with an incredible nickname, I think, for John Cooper, where she was talking about, she's like, I love seeing Keith jumping around looking for someone to hug. She's like, I don't want to be mean, but I'd love to see the reaction of Coach Cooper, a.k.a. Mr. Cool.
Right.
And I thought, you know, I'm going to start using that. That's interesting. But look, first of all, this Leafs team is extremely banged up, too. The Leafs, first of all, Samsonov is clearly playing through something. He's clearly very hurt. Every time he goes down, it looks like he's not going to get back up. But also, like as Sheldon Keefe said before that game, they had a number of game time decisions. Mm. And you know, if you look at one little bit of this game, TJ Brodie is clearly dealing with something. This is not the TJ Brodie. Like, TJ Brodie is the epitome of steadiness. You know, right now he has to be dealing with some heinous stuff. Morgan Riley's face looked like it got tenderized by like a meat hammer.
Yeah.
Like just crazy stuff. But yeah, this team does look different. And the one thing is that, like you said, with Achari and Riley. I think O'Reilly is 100%, like, he's the guy. He's the guy you bring in. He has changed the complexion of this team, not just in how they're able to deploy their centers, deploy their forward lines, you know, put them on the third line away when you have, you know, this when you don't have last change, whereas stacking that top six when you do. But on top of that, like, there was a play, I believe it was in the second period, where the Leafs, they'd just gone through maybe like a 15-minute stretch of just nothing. Like, they couldn't even get into the zone. Tampa was incredible in the neutral zone. They finally get in there, and they're about to break out right away, and O'Reilly just goes on this rampage where he's like, I'm going to get the puck. And he just pickpockets it from like five different Lightning guys trying to get out there and creates a scoring chance. And it was the only, I'd say, grade A scoring chance the Leafs got in the second period. But you look at this guy, and he's like down 4-1. You don't have this guy on the team, I think the Leafs would have folded. He's a guy who hasn't been here. You know, he's a guy who hasn't, you know, been part of those failures. So he's like, the game's out of reach. Like, try and get it back in. He doesn't have those demons.
Exactly.
I think that's extremely important. What are you thinking? So they're coming back on Thursday. We're recording this on Tuesday, so there's 2 days. So we have 2 days to ruminate over this. But call your shot now. Leafs in 5, Leafs in 6, Tampa in 7. What's going on?
Yeah, I think it's going to be Leafs in 5.
You think so?
I do, because, and again, I think it's O'Reilly leading the charge where he's going to say, like, step on the neck, boys.
Yes.
Like, this is... That's what they were missing in the past. Not that you're not aware of it.
No, but they were missing the killer instinct.
But they were missing that killer instinct. And I will say, before we move on, Derek Lalonde has been fantastic on Hockey Night in Canada.
Could he have a little more charisma maybe on camera? Yes. But his insights?
Incredible. And, you know, what he was saying about Vasilevsky and point shots and the way Tampa, you know, moved around their defensive structure because of that, that's the kind of stuff that, like, I love to hear that, just that insider, those tidbits, explaining the game. All of a sudden, I'm obsessed with offensive zone face-offs because of Derek Lalonde, and I feel I am better for it.
You know what? Derek Lalonde has been on TV for like a week and a half, 2 weeks now. That's the most meaningful hockey insight I've heard on a panel in probably like 10 years.
I love it.
It has changed the complexion of how we watch this series now.
Yeah.
We're like... We had no, Vasilevsky is a seemingly infallible figure.
Yeah, right? You just assume that it's like
he's good at everything.
Like Darth Vader.
You think he's good at everything. And yet Tampa had to change their defensive structure because he was bad. And if you watch back to that game, the Leafs know it.
Yeah.
The amount of like just long wistful shots even that they're floating on net, it's way more. It's like all of them turned into Tyson Berry, where they just take these weird long flickers from the the blue line, but they're going in. They're working.
And here's my only thought on that is, like, okay, if Tampa knew that, how come the other 30, 31 teams never, like, clued in and like where were their video guys and be like, hey, Vasilevsky might kind of struggle there? Maybe it's because Tampa had, like, already figured it out. And
they changed their D structure, but
and
now Lalonde's gone. Maybe it's a different thing.
Maybe.
But I would love to. You know, we were boots on the ground watching it. I would love to go back and see if Colorado is doing that in the Cup final.
Yeah, very
you know, because they have a lot of offensive talent on the blue line. I was wondering, but you know, then again, we'll have to see. It's hindsight. Anyway, so yes, they're like we said, recording this on Tuesday. There are a couple series here that are on the verge of elimination. You know, the New York Islanders, they play tonight to try and extend their season against the Carolina Hurricanes. They're on the road, and then the Florida Panthers will get obliterated the next night. no disrespect to the Panthers. Look, they won one of those games, so maybe they can come back and do it. But which team do you think is going to be the first to get eliminated here?
I do think it's going to be the Islanders.
Okay.
Carolina at home. I mean, it's a raucous arena down there.
They have the siren ringer guy.
Exactly. And I just feel like, and, you know, I don't like to take shots at the Islanders because, like, they're good at what they do. And I know it's not necessarily fun for neutral observers, but your goal is to win hockey games. And they've won a considerable amount of playoff games in the past 4 or 5 years, beating some very good squads along the way. But I think Carolina, again, even though they've had injuries, you know, no Teuvo Teravainen.
No Patre, no Svechnikov.
They plug in guys, and, like, you know, Mackenzie McEachern's the hero all of a sudden. And, you know, Seth Jarvis, who has always been
good but he's taking a step up.
I just feel like this is a Carolina team that's, like, not going to leave anything to chance. Mm-hmm. So I just, I don't see what the Islanders could do any more of to wring one out.
I saw a, I agree with everything you just said. I believe someone on our you know, the Hockey News New York Islanders site, who was saying, you know, why not just try and start Semyon Varlamov in game five? You know, like Sorokin, he's, you know, he's had a bit of a rough go so far. How much that's on him, how much that's on the Islanders is remains to be seen. What would you think of that?
I mean, at this point, like, why not? But, I mean, Varlamov's not better than Ilya Sorokin.
Exactly.
So all you're really hoping for is to kind of trip the Canes up where they're not used to facing Varlamov. But I don't know if that's enough to really stymie Sebastian Aho. I think he would find a workaround.
Yeah, and I think you go down with your guy, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's if you're the band on the Titanic, you don't switch up instruments the last second. You just play, and if you're gonna sink, you sink. But Sorokin's, you know, he's gonna be nominated for the Vezina. If he's not, that's a travesty, and I will, you know, lead an insurrection on the NHL office if they do. I'm that passionate about it. But you go down swinging with your guy.
Yeah.
So I think that's it. But I just thought that was an interesting thing to pick your brain on, because I saw that and I'm like, the Hockey News, one of our guys, interesting. I'm going to have to take this opinion seriously.
No bad ideas.
Throw in everything. Look, when your back's against the wall, you got to try everything, man.
We're just blue skying.
Exactly. Like I said, you know, I've said on the podcast before, my little sister, when we were growing up, she would beat the crap out of me all the time. Because she was just, and she would have that move where she'd go on her back and just start flail kicking. And I feel like that's what New York Islanders fans are doing right now. They're just, their back's against the wall, and they're just on their back flail kicking, and maybe that looks like starting.
That's when you back up and just lob something heavy on her.
I hope my mom's watching this, because gave her a shout out. And that, you're right.
That's just sibling 101.
I hope your kids are watching this, getting some tactics.
Yeah, sure.
We'll have to see. All right.
They do not care about sports.
They do not? Okay, cool. So, Cale Makar. Noted goon at this point.
Apparently.
Cale Makar still looks like a child. Like, he does. And yet, here he is, just absolutely obliterating Jared McCann against the boards during the Kraken Avalanche game four. That was game four, right?
Yep.
Yes. Sorry.
I tied it up.
It's the playoffs. The days of the week are just blurring together. It's crazy.
Yes.
The Seattle Kraken tied the series, but Cale Makar possibly taking himself out for not just one, but multiple games of the series. He's got a hearing today with NHL player safety. That hit, I think we can all agree that hit is suspendable.
Yes.
Puck was nowhere near either of them, and he just completely destroys McCann from a little bit far away from the boards, and it injures McCann. He leaves, and I believe they announced he will not play in Game 5.
Yeah, and it felt like Game 6 was doubtful as well.
Yeah, that's a 40-goal score off the table.
Yeah.
That's tough. But you have, as we've said many times, like, the best defenseman in the league. That will be, like, I think, as much as it pains them, I think the Kraken will take that swap. It's a tough swap. It's a Sophie's choice, but I think they will in a pinch. So if Makar gets suspended, which he will, how many games do you think, number one? And then I guess we'll fold that into, Seattle could actually do this.
Yeah, I'm going to say 2 games for Makar. He's usually a very clean player.
Yeah, he's getting Lady Bing votes, you were saying.
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, principal point of contact was not the head, even though the result was bad. So I feel like 2 games is probably the number. The fact that McCann is injured certainly plays a factor into this. I feel like, you know, first-time offender, and, you know, Makar will have a chance to explain himself. I believe he said that he thought the puck was still around there.
Regardless, you can't do that, though.
You can't do that. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, it's all things that they will weigh. Can the Kraken do it? I mean, I feel with Makar out of the lineup and Landeskog out of the lineup and Nichushkin hasn't been there, Phil Grubauer has outplayed Alexander Gurriev.
I was going to get into that, yeah.
Yeah, so, and then, you know, I mean, the Kraken, like, they're winning the special teams battle. So, it's been a pretty close series just in terms of the stats. It's wild to think that the defending champs could go in the first round to a team that has never been in the playoffs before. But Seattle's not backing down.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they have a lot of motivation now. Right? I mean...
Oh, if there's bulletin board material, there's a guy murdering your best player.
Exactly. Yeah. So I feel like it's going to be a rallying point. And Colorado, this is where things get really tight for them, where it's like, okay, well, not only are we losing our best defenseman, and, you know, most people will say best player.
Yes.
How do we come back from that? Who steps up? Mm-hmm. How do we get ourselves back on track? You know, so far it's been a pretty tight series, and you know, Seattle had a chance to win another one of those games, and Colorado made a comeback on them.
Yeah,
but I think Seattle can do it. I think, you know, Game 5 is going to be pivotal.
Well, yeah, I mean,
psychologically
goes without saying. There, look, the Kraken can win this series. I'm not sure if they will, but they absolutely can. Yeah. And look, this is. Losing Cale Makar is huge. I mean, obviously, that goes without saying. Like, getting into the nitty-gritty of, you know, taking Cale Makar out of a lineup, it's futile because it's like taking an engine out of a car, you know? Like, right. It's pretty tough.
That's a good metaphor.
Thank you. It even rhymes with his last name, so there you go.
Need a star? Call Cale Makar.
There you go. But, look, what it does is it forces everyone up. You know, Eric Johnson was a healthy scratch for a little bit. Now he goes back in the lineup, so now you're playing, you know, Devin Taves, and you're forcing Bo Byram, who has developed into a good... top four guy, but like now he's going to potentially be a top pair guy. Thankfully, in relation to last year, you still have Sam Girard. They lost Sam Girard for the entire midway through the second round, and then throughout the rest of their cup run. But like Phil Grubauer, goaltending was basically the big reason why I picked this to be like a sweep almost.
Right.
I could not have been more wrong, and I'm glad. I could not be happier that I could not have been more wrong, because not only is this great hockey, but seeing the fans in Seattle, it's amazing. Like we've said, it is just, it's lovely to see them succeeding. But like, the fact that Phil Grubauer was the biggest sort of hurdle, I think, towards their contention or their ability to pull off this upset. He's got a 9-16 right now.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Like for the playoffs, that's fantastic, especially against the Colorado team. And the thing is, like the Avs are banged up. Like, not just are they losing Makar, not just is Nichushkin, but like we have no idea when he's going to come back. Mm-hmm. And it's not worth speculating on that. But like, you know, there's a reason why everyone was hurt towards their year. And yes, towards the end of the year. And yes, they came back for the playoffs. So that doesn't mean they're fully healthy.
Totally.
And Colorado's a very top heavy team, too. You know, their depth, I was wondering whether or not they were going to go out and get, you know, a score or someone to put out on that third, fourth line to round it out. They didn't. Lars Eller, you know, is not really the difference maker they once was. He wins draws, that's fine, but he's not there. So Seattle is just, they're just solid, you know, 1-4 when it comes to their lines. And, you know, they aren't really missing anyone on the back end. And then if you have a goaltender that's able to keep you in games, maybe not win them single-handedly, but keep you in games.
Yeah.
And you're going against a Colorado team that is losing the reigning Norris winner and the guy who has like redefined what a modern NHL defenseman is. Mm-hmm. You could absolutely win this series. And I think it's not out of the realm possibility that they do.
Yeah. And how interesting is it that Grubauer is having this good series against the team he used to play for?
Yeah.
You know, I always think that the shooters have an advantage on a goalie they know. But it feels like maybe in this case, it works the other way around, where Grubauer knows the tendencies of the Colorado shooters and can adjust accordingly. That, to me, is sort of a fascinating subplot as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I just think the fact that he's doing this after being a sub-900 goalie for literally the entire last 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, it's remarkable. All right. Brad Marchand or Matthew Tkachuk. You know, the fact that these two guys are in the same series has been great. Yep. It would be better if one of their teams had made it more interesting, but, you know, we'll see. There's an interesting point here. Is, you know, you look at the battle of the pests, the battle of the thorns in your side. Which one would you rather have?
Yeah, this is like something I've been thinking about. The fact that both of them are in the same series.
Yeah.
And again, you know, Florida has blown some chances in this series, right?
Absolutely.
It doesn't have to be 3-1 right now. It probably should be 2-2. But Matthew Tkachuk has definitely been at the forefront of the positive side of the equation. I mean, he's... like we talked with Ryan O'Reilly, he's the guy that drags guys into the fight with him.
Yes.
And, you know, looking at that Florida team, I think I kind of underestimated the matchup in this series, where you think about Boston, you're like, oh man, like they're not fun to play against. Yeah. You know, they've got guys that like Brad Marchand that are just nasty to play against. But then you look at Florida and you're like, well, Matthew Tkachuk's not fun to play against at all. Mm-hmm. Radko Gudas is not fun to play against. Sam Bennett is not fun to play against. I mean, they kind of stack up pretty similarly in that respect. Mm-hmm. With this one, it's like really hard for me to choose, because with Tkachuk, obviously got more size. You know, scoring, I mean, they've both put up some fantastic seasons in their careers already. Marchand does a bit more penalty killing. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they can both agitate. They can both fight if they need to. Marchand does have a cup already. So that would be the only factor that would maybe be a tiebreaker. But for me, it's so 50-50. Like, if you ask me who I would want on my team, I'd probably have to flip a coin.
Is it, who do you want on your team, like, for a one, you know, gun to the earth, one game, you know, series or whatever? Or is it for the future? Because if it's for the future, it's absolutely Matthew Tkachuk.
Sure, yeah, he's
younger. He's younger, he has more offensive upside.
If it's one game, I'll go Marchand.
Absolutely.
Because, yeah, he's a clutch guy. We've seen it consistently over his career. So if that's
or even just a one metric series, like even not even if it's just a one game, but a series, I'm taking Marchand. I think he's more seasoned. And all that, but if you're moving forward, I mean, it's absolutely Matthew Tkachuk. But man, like Marchand, then again, Matthew Tkachuk was able to get the Bruins' Vezina favorite goalie kicked out of the game for trying to fight him. So that's pretty remarkable. I feel like Marchand hasn't fully been on his full rat behavior this series. We haven't seen his greatest hits yet, but. Yeah. Maybe he's saving that for the second round.
And that's the fascinating part, is like it's almost like mutually assured destruction, where, you know, if you can get under somebody's skin and get an advantage, then that's great. But if you have somebody on the other side doing the same thing, then it's like, okay, well, should we just go after each other? Like,
yeah,
I would love to see Marchand and Tkachuk go after each other.
That would be great.
It feels like they never do. And there is a size disadvantage there,
definitely,
obviously.
But we need Godzilla versus King Kong eventually, you know? And look, Godzilla's got the size on King Kong. We'll say that. But King Kong's, he's got that little hammer that he has in the newest movie. So there you go.
Does he actually have a hammer?
He literally has, like,
somewhat
of
it.
Pretty much. Like, somewhat of an axe. Like, from, like, the center of the earth that he gets.
To digress, like, it was never really a competition. Because Godzilla has radioactive breath.
Well, and he's also, like, the size.
Yeah, like he's got like
the CN Tower, like
the size, and he's got like the long range attack. So let's just face it, like all those movies were basically Japan versus America.
Yeah.
And they evened it up because it's an American audience.
But then in the newest one, spoiler alert, like they created a mecha Godzilla, and so Godzilla and Kong had to work together.
Yeah, okay.
And now it's Godzilla X, not Godzilla versus Kong, Godzilla X Kong. So they're a buddy cop duo now.
Nice.
So it's great.
Getting too old for this.
Exactly. It was one day to retirement.
Exactly.
Exactly. All right. Who has a better shot of the second round? Because now we have series that are tied. Mm-hmm. We have two phenomenally, you know, entertaining series that are tied, featuring, you know, marquee stars in marquee locations, except for Edmonton. You know, just like. Sorry, it's the City of Champions. I apologize. Crazy stuff. The Kings and the Oilers are tied. The Devils and the Rangers are tied. Who has a better shot at making the second round, the Kings or the Devils?
Yeah, so I think the Kings missed their opportunity big time.
They had a chance to step on the throat, and they did not.
You're up 3-0, and it's funny because when I was watching that game, it's 3-0, and I'm like, if any team can easily just make up that difference, it's the Oilers. Mm-hmm. You know, like anytime I'm watching a game and there's a lead, I sort of say to myself, like, okay, well, can you get X number of goals past this goalie in this amount of time before giving up another one? And with the Oilers, it's like, I don't care who's in net.
It does not matter.
It doesn't matter. McDavid and Draisaitl, if you say they need 4 goals in the third period, they could do that. And they didn't even need to do that because it wasn't the third period. I feel like the Devils could do it. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying they will.
But they absolutely could.
But Akira Schmid in net has been the difference. And what was interesting was when I was writing up the Devils team story for playoff preview on Newsstands Now, one thing I noticed was that Vitek Vanacek did not play great against the Rangers this year.
Yeah.
They hung at least three goals on him.
Every time, yeah.
Every time. So, series starts, Rangers, obviously high-octane offense, Chris Kreider was on fire, and they jumped on the Devils, who, you know, not as an experienced team as New York in the playoffs. You bring in Akira Schmid, again, Rangers don't have much of a book on him. He hasn't played that much in the NHL, got tremendous size.
Yes.
And sometimes it just takes that little personnel switch for the team to get reset. And keep in mind, New Jersey won the two games at MSG.
Yes, which is huge.
Which is not an easy building to play in. You know, Jack Hughes is getting rolling now. And you look at the Rangers, Panarin and Zibanejad only have 2 points each in this series. You obviously need more from them. So all of a sudden, New Jersey's got some confidence. They got a new goalie who's just there for the ride. This is just all gravy for Akira Schmid.
Yeah.
You know, a new experience. Let's just go with it. You know, really no pressure. You come in, it's like, hey, just do what you can for us. I think it's now wide open. And again, game five, I think game five in this series, maybe not as crucial. Because the Rangers do have the experience where if the Devils win game five, I think the Rangers can say, like, okay, well, we can still pull this out.
Yes. We have home ice advantage.
Yeah. With the Kings, if they lose game five, I feel like Edmonton would just have too much confidence and be like, all we have to do is roll our big boys and we can seal this off.
Absolutely. I think, okay, here's the thing, though. I have two thoughts on the Kings. I have one is that they failed to step on the neck after on the Oilers' neck, despite holding Connor McDavid to zero even strength goals.
Yeah.
So you had the best player in the world potentially of all time, and you were able to hold him to zero goals, and yet you're still walking away at a tied series after four games. That's tough. Then again, I look at it and I go, the Oilers have done pretty much all of their damage on the power play.
Right.
We know that it's a historically good power play.
Yes.
And as we know from you know, not just like sort of our observations, but like statistical models. Penalties after game four in the series, when it gets into this sort of best of three, they go way down.
Very true.
And here, and so I'm wondering, you know, the refs put their, I was about to say, the refs put the whistles away. The refs put their whistles away. Are the Oilers going to be as successful? If they get down again, are they going to have those three power plays where they're able to come back and basically just, you know, play Globetrotters hockey in the offensive zone? I wonder if that's possible. I don't think it might be. Like then, but then again, Connor McDavid is the cheat code. He is the you know, oh, they're all set. Yeah, but Connor McDavid.
Exactly.
And you go like, oh, okay, well, there you go.
He's up, down, down, left, right, BA, BA, select, start.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Is that Mike Tyson's punch out?
No, it was Contra. I think it might have been a lot of Capitals games, but specifically it was like Infinite Lives in Contra.
But he's the cheat code.
Yeah. Now, here's the question, just to get totally psychological.
Let's do it.
If the Kings know that the refs are going to put their whistles away, do they take a few more liberties, but then do the refs notice that and say, okay, well, now we're going to call it because we don't want you guys trying to put one over on us?
Here's what I love. It's wondering whether...
I'm sure refs have Twitter.
Here's what I love is, you know, predicting games on whether or not, on what mood the ref is going to be in that game. You know, and how petty they're going to be feeling. That's lovely. No, I do think that the Kings, I think they're definitely the more physical team.
For sure.
And they have the guys on that team that have won before.
Yep.
You know, they have the I was going to say the John McQuaig. They don't. But they have Kopitar and guys like that. And they have the ability to, you know, to play a physical game. Philip Deneau, you know, like you turn him loose on McDavid.
Yeah.
Whatnot. It's going to be interesting, but I do think that Connor McDavid is that cheat code. And if Stuart Skinner is able to regain his form, even a little bit, even be like a 900 goalie, game over.
Yeah. Do you think they go back to Skinner?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Are you kidding me? You don't.
I got to ask the question.
I know you have to ask the question. If they go to Jack Campbell,
yeah.
like after everything that happened, Stuart Skinner, like, yes, obviously McDavid, but like in terms of net, Stuart Skinner's the reason they're there. He saved
it's
their
true.
Season.
It's you true. Get
McDavid could have scored 200 points this year. It doesn't negate the fact that Campbell was like an 878 goalie.
Yeah.
So like you can do whatever. Stuart Skinner is it like dragged them to the playoffs. You go back to Jack Campbell after one bad game, you're done. Like you might as well pack up and go back to, you know, one of the marquee cities, which is Edmonton. So yeah, that's great. We are now going to talk to actor, hockey fan, D.B. Sweeney. It's going to be a lot of fun, so stick around for that.
Welcome back to the Hockey News Podcast. We have a very special guest with us right now, actor D.B. Sweeney. You know him from many roles over the years. His newest, Megalopolis, Francis Ford Coppola directing, no big deal there. DB, obviously a hockey fan as well. You played a hockey player in the classic rom-com, The Cutting Edge. First of all, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, it's great to, The Cutting Edge is the only movie I ever got to make in Toronto, one of my favorite cities.
There you go, very nice. And let's start off just with your journey into hockey. As it would be, you learned to skate for that movie. What was that whole process like?
Well, it was a challenge, you know, because, you know, learning something when you're a little kid is one thing, but I was, you know, 29 years old, I think. Mm-hmm. And, the studio MGM rented out a rink in New York City where I was living and my co-star Moira Kelly, she couldn't skate either. So they gave us 3 months and they rented this rink. And so she and I kind of got into the spirit of the movie and started competing with each other to see who could get better in 3 months. And it worked out pretty good. We both got to a pretty good level of competence.
Who won that race though?
You know, she kind of won it because she was focusing on the figure skating, and after 3 months, she was already landing like jumps, like single axle jumps, which, you know, no big deal for a competitive skater, but for somebody that hadn't skated, it was a pretty big deal. But I got the last laugh because she broke her leg landing one of those jumps. So she didn't skate in the movie at all.
Really? So she spent all that time learning and then she didn't end up skating in the movie.
No. And her double was a great Canadian girl. Sharon Carrs was a very competitive Canadian skater for the national, national competitor. And Sharon looked so much like Moira that you never really noticed. They couldn't really find a good photo double for me. So I ended up having to do more than they had planned. But what that skating training did for us, it really gave Moira and I this history and understanding of the characters and that chemistry thing that you can't always count on being there. But I think that training really helped us to develop it.
What you're saying is you're basically Tom Cruise. You're doing all of your own stunts.
Well, you know, I mean, I played hockey with Tom Cruise. So if he does a hockey movie, he better get a stunt double.
Oh, nice. Whoa. Nice. And let's get into the hockey part of it. Just your journey, you know, getting into the hockey world and, you know, learning to be a hockey player for that movie, but just then also playing hockey ever since recreationally.
Yeah, you know, it was really opened a window for me because I've always been a huge hockey fan. I'm from Long Island, but I'm a Rangers fan, which doesn't make sense to my friends who, you know, root for the Islanders. But always been a Rangers fan, always been a huge admirer of the sport. And so now, yeah, it's really added this new level to my life where I, you know, wherever I go on a movie, I bring my hockey bag, but I can't let the producers see it because they'll ban me from skating if they see it. But I always bring it with me and just try to be extra careful.
I'm really interested in hearing you talk about playing hockey with Tom Cruise, you know, a guy who, you know, we all know that he's hanging off airplanes recreationally and jumping out of them and whatnot. You are playing hockey with him. You're saying he's not that good.
Well, I don't want to trash him as much. I'll tell you what, I'll give you some praise for another Hollywood guy. Keanu Reeves is a goalie and he's a pretty good goalie. Played with him, played with, who else? Well, I played with Mike Myers. He wasn't very good. So I guess the truth is the truth, right? I mean, Kiefer is a pretty good hockey player. I've played with him. So there are some guys that can play, Cuba Gooding Jr. So, it's not all actors, hide behind their doubles.
Yeah. Now, I have to imagine playing hockey with actors, that's got to be pretty interesting because it feels like the competitiveness would be at like another level when you have people that are so good at one thing doing something else. Like, what's the vibes in those games like?
Well, it's pretty interesting. We had for a long time in L.A., Jerry Bruckheimer, the producer, had this sort of like loose affiliation of actors and writers and everybody that played in this weekly skate. And then once a year, we'd go to Las Vegas and play. And those Las Vegas games, we had no crowd, you know, so there was really – but we had former and current NHL players on every team. So we'd have like on a 15-man team, we'd have five current or former recently retired NHL players. So it was really good hockey. Of course, we couldn't have any NHL goalies because – none of us are ever going to score on an NHL goalie who's trying. But if any goalies came, they would have to be skaters, you know. And so we had a couple guys, you know, who did that, you know, goalies who got to play out and they loved it. But when we do these charity celebrity games, like I played in front of 16,000 people at Madison Square Garden once. And, you know, you're just trying not to mess up. It's not so much like I'm trying to be better than Kiefer or something, or you're just hoping that you make a good play, or you just don't make one of those plays that ends up on SportsCenter, or, you know, where you look like, you know, you're a dummy.
So you mentioned, you know, I will say you mentioned Jerry Bruckheimer, and, you know, my growing up, my dad and I, we were huge fans of CSI Miami, which you guessed it on. And, you know, upon looking back, you know, because I watched it far too young, as I should have for a show like that. I ended up noticing that you played different characters. So three different characters on all three shows in the CSI universe. How did that come about?
Well, you know, I mean, it just they were all Jerry shows, and I knew Billy Peterson on CSI, and then CSI Miami just kind of came along, and I thought, well, I might as well go for the trifecta because, you know, Gary Sinise is a buddy of mine. So, you know, I guess I was just hoping they were going to do CSI Long Island and maybe they'd give me a look.
Nice.
And Gary Sinise, another hockey fan as well.
Yeah. Gary's a big fan. And, you know, he's done so much for our troops and first responders. I have a lot of admiration for him.
Now, I also wondered, too, because you've done other sports movies in your career, 8 Men Out, a big one. When you're playing an athlete, is the vibe on the set different? Like, in 8 Men Out, when you have, like, literally guys that are supposed to be an entire baseball team, do you get a different kind of camaraderie where it almost reflects sports?
A little bit. Yeah, that was a really – 8 Men Out was a great experience because it was all guys pretty much, and we were all staying in the same hotel. It was a really crappy hotel and a low-budget movie, so there wasn't a lot of amenities or anything. So we kind of all played cards every night and watched sports and movies on TV, and there was a real bonding there. But Charlie Sheen and I were really the only two guys who had played baseball. I played at a pretty high level, and Charlie had played a little. So for me, I was just trying to – I was learning how to hit left-handed because – nobody, you know, Shoeless Joe Jackson was a lefty, and nobody had ever really convincingly played a baseball player up to that point. So I felt like it was a great opportunity. What I didn't realize was that Kevin Costner was filming Bull Durham at the same time, and he was killing it too. So, you know, he played college baseball, and he looks terrific. So, you know, I really felt like I had an opportunity to be the first guy to really believably be a baseball player.
That's awesome. Well, I mean, you know, obviously you're in the glitz and glamour of Hollywood. You're a celebrity, and yet you've been playing with, you know, you've been playing with all these celebrities, you've been playing with all these NHLers. Specifically, do you have any interesting, I would say, sort of like off the ice stories, interactions with any of these NHLers? Do you guys get up to any fun shenanigans or any interesting tidbits that they laid on you, maybe in the dressing room, maybe even out after you guys play the game?
Yeah, I just edited through about 17 stories that I can't tell. but I'll tell you this much. So I am prepared for this podcast. I got my Tim Hortons ready. I'm ready to talk about hockey.
There we go.
But, guys, one thing that the first game I ever played in was a Rangers old-timers game. They called it old-timers still then. It was now it's alumni, I guess. But so I had been skating for like 7 weeks, and it was an old-timers game against the Islanders old-timers on Long Island in front of 3,000 people. I didn't even know what I was supposed to do in the warm-up. But Pierre LaRouche was on the team. And he said to me, DB, you just put your stick on the ice and go to the net. And I thought, well, that sounds like good advice. So I'll do that. So on my first shift, the puck goes off my stick into the net. And I was like, oh, my God, I'm a natural at this. And then later in the game, it happened again. And both times it was Pierre LaRouche. And so later on in the locker room, he was collecting $50 from every player. He had bet the whole team that he could score 2 goals off my stick.
Amazing.
that's unreal.
And because you're a Rangers fan, let's do we always do something called rapid fire on this show. We'll do a mini rapid fire here, special edition. Favorite Ranger of all time?
Oh, that's hard. Wow, really hard. Brian Leetch.
That's a good one. Yeah, I mean, like Mark Messier had the guarantee and everything, but if you think about Brian Leetch and what he was able to do as a defenseman during that era, just incredibly impressive. Here's another rapid fire one for you. Obviously, we mentioned Megalopolis with Francis Ford Coppola. Other than the Francis Ford Coppola movies that you have been in, what is your favorite Francis Ford Coppola movie of all time?
Godfather, with a close second to Godfather 2.
Nice.
Did he give you, or you know, working with, sorry, what did you say?
And a close third to Patton, which a lot of people don't realize. Coppola wrote Patton, which is one of my favorite movies.
Oh, absolutely. Now, did he, Megalopolis, I'm a big movie guy, so apologies for how Hollywood skewed my questions are for you. But the movie that you were filming with him, Megalopolis, you know, it's, I believe it's mostly, if not all, self-funded by him.
Yeah, he put up the money. It's over $100 million. He's been trying to make this movie for 35 years. And the cast is unbelievable. Adam Driver, Natalie Emanuel, Aubrey Plaza, Giancarlo Esposito, Lawrence Fishburne, John Voight, Dustin Hoffman, Shia LaBeouf. I mean, everybody wanted to be in this movie. So it's really one of the great casts that has ever been assembled. And the movie looks incredible. And I can't wait for it to come out.
What was that set like? Because I, you know, you talk about, you know, you're behind the bench with a guy like Scotty Bowman or you know, any of the great coaches. You watch a guy like Coppola, you know, who's made arguably the American movie, the great American movie in The Godfather. What's it like watching a guy direct like that? It must be like watching a surgeon perform, you know, heart surgery or something.
Totally. I rarely go to the set when I'm not working on a job, on a TV show or a movie, because I feel like nothing good can happen. You know, you bump into somebody that you don't need to see or, you know, so I stay away. But on this movie, even in days when I wasn't working, I would go to the set just to watch him. And the thing that really comes through, first of all, it's his money. He's the boss. There's no committee of like, what should we do? And then somebody makes a decision. He's the boss. And, you know, so you watch that process that he goes through where he knows, you know, it's high stakes poker, but he's making these decisions in a very calm, methodical way. He includes input from other people, but he's the boss and he makes a decision and that's that.
Because there are no studio notes, does that give you more of like a free rein to maybe not like improvise, but sort of take more chances in that sense?
Well, we had a week of rehearsal, which is really, really unusual in this day and age. Back in the day, we used to get that once in a while, at least a few days. But we had a whole week of rehearsal. And during that time, improvisation is welcome and encouraged. But on the set, you know, I mean, Francis wants the lines. You know, he wrote the script. You know, he's got like a whole handful of Oscars for writing movies and, you know, he knows what he's doing. So sometimes, you know, for me, I like doing the lines. I'm not a big improviser because I feel like, you know, let's set it. And then if it can be improved in between takes, great. But some of the other actors were improvising and he would get annoyed, you know, and they would correct themselves pretty quickly.
Fair enough. And jumping back to hockey for a second, you know, talking about Jerry Bruckheimer earlier, obviously, you mentioned you played in Vegas, and then with him having the Seattle Kraken now as the co-owner, what do you think about just how hockey has expanded in those two markets and what Jerry's been able to do?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, there's obviously a parallel with Vegas where, you know, the NHL has definitely changed the rules for expansion drafts and, you know, to give – it used to be an expansion team was a doormat for, you know, maybe a decade or more before being competitive. And the hurry up that they've given these teams I think is good for the league. And also, you know, you kind of root for them because they tend to be, you know, assembled from, like, unwanted parts and people that are overlooked or maybe have been slighted by their original teams. And so you got guys – a whole bunch of guys with chips on their shoulder. And so it's kind of fun to watch them, you know, go up against the juggernauts, like, you know, watching this series with Colorado. It's, you know, everybody expects Colorado to win that series, but Seattle's very scrappy and it's been really entertaining.
Indeed. And finally, we have a photo of you with our owner / publisher, Graham Rustin, in the background. Graham said you would have some pretty fond memories and some fun to poke at him with that. How have you known Graham over the years?
Yeah, I met Graham during these, you know, celebrity hockey games, and we used to have a lot of fun. You know, I forgot to mention Michael J. Fox was part of it before he got sick, and Dennis Leary. We had a bunch of really great guys that would come out, and it was just a lot of laughs. You know, you fly into Pittsburgh or Toronto or someplace, and you put on this game, raise a bunch of money, And anyway, it was a lot of fun. Graham's a great guy.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for joining the show. It's been awesome to have you on, and good luck.
I got to leave you with something, all right? I got to leave you with something a little controversial.
Oh, do it. Let's do it.
All right, here it is. Now, I think everybody agrees that Erik Karlsson is the Norris Trophy winner this year. I don't think there's any real dispute. In my opinion, it should be unanimous. But I want to take it a step further. I'm going to throw it out there that it's the greatest offensive season by a defenseman in NHL history. And everybody can argue with me, but the only competition really is, I mean, there's been 11 seasons where a defenseman has had 100 points, 6 by Bobby Orr, 5 by Paul Coffey. The Paul Coffey seasons get thrown out because he's either got Lemieux or Gretzky on those teams. So he's getting a lot of free points. He's a great player. Not trying to take anything away from him. Obviously one of the all-time greats. And Bobby Orr, everybody agrees, is the greatest defenseman of all time. Not taking anything away from him. But if you look at the percentage of points, Erik Karlsson, I had to write this down because I didn't want to forget it, right? So Erik Karlsson was a part of only Bobby Orr in 1969-70 and Erik Karlsson this year, only defensemen in NHL history that were part of 40% or more of their team's goals. And if you think about that, it's kind of astonishing. Like, you know, and Bobby Orr was playing with, you know, Ken Hodge and Johnny Busick and Phil Esposito. You know, I don't think anybody would mistake Thomas Hertl or Logan Couture or Timo Meier for any of those guys. So, I mean, I really think that Erik Karlsson, and everybody always says, oh, he's on a crappy team. And, you know, but I think it's harder when you're on a crappy team, because when you're playing against the Bruins, you got a key on 9 guys. Mm-hmm. Playing against the Sharks, you stop Erik Karlsson, you're going to win the game. So anyway, I throw that out there. And so that, you know, the numbers are, where is it? I wrote this down because I don't want to forget it. So yeah, so it's 43%. Both Bobby Orr and Erik Karlsson this past year are a part of 43% of their team's goals, which is, you think about it, it's just kind of astonishing. So, the Paul Coffey years, he was never more than like 30 or 32. And a lot of the other Bobby Orr years, you know, you had a lot of other players getting points, so he wasn't, you know, as much of a factor in as many goals. But anyway, I want to leave that with you guys. I know everybody's going to hate on me for that, but he's absolutely the best Swedish-born defenseman of all time. And now the Red Wings fans can hate on me because he had a better season than Lidström ever did.
There you go. Wow. I love the enthusiasm. I love the hot takery. DB Sweeney taking it strong to end it off. And he's got his Timmies, so it's all good. Thanks so much again, DB. It's been awesome.
Thank you, guys.
All right, it's rapid fire time. Thank you to DB Sweeney, by the way, for doing that. It was great. You know, we'll have him back on and everything, because he did his homework, man.
That's right.
Yeah, he really did. He came prepared. He came to play. Yeah. Ryan, though, you have rapid fire this week.
I do.
Let's do it. Let's do some rapid fire.
All right. Continuing on from the DB Sweeney interview.
Okay. Okay.
What's your favorite Francis Ford Coppola film of all time?
Everyone wants to say The Godfather or The Godfather Part 2. Those are, I think, perfect movies. Mm-hmm. Love them. They're great. I'm going to go with Apocalypse Now. I think that movie, just, and there's something, just because I love movies so much, just knowing how that basically drove everyone who made that movie to insanity.
Right.
It just adds an extra level to that movie that mm-hmm. I love. Knowing that Martin Sheen had like a heart attack shortly after his like first scene in the movie. You know, it's just like, that's commitment to the craft. You know, I love that. So yeah, I would have to go Apocalypse Now, but man, like he's done, there's a reason why he is as revered as DB was talking about there. Like he's, you know, one of the great directors in cinema history, really. There you
go. The correct answer is Apocalypse Now.
Yes.
I was gonna say the same thing. Next question, last book you read.
See, it's funny. So I like to read, I do like to listen to audiobooks, mainly because I'm always on the go. And I don't really read fiction ever. I always read.
I'm the same way.
Yeah, I always read nonfiction, and usually it's sports books. Like, I love reading about how, like, you can, especially with baseball, because there's so much. Like, if you give me a book about how, you know, this GM built a World Series champion and, like, the entire sort of behind the scenes machinations of that, mm-hmm. I'm all for it. I would say the last book I read of that, it was Astro Ball. Unfortunately, that book is now being proven totally irrelevant.
Right.
Because they cheated the entire time, and it just conveniently didn't mention that in the book.
Right.
But it's very, very well written. And another one, I try and read this book every year, and this one is fiction. It's my favorite book of all time. It's Ender's Game by Orson Scott Card. It's a shame that the author is a bad person. But, you know, it's all about separating the art from the artist. And yeah. It is one of the great seminal science fiction books ever, made into a very bad movie. And I think that they shouldn't have ever made it into a movie. It's borderline impossible to make it into a movie. But man, what it's the best book of all time. I started reading it way before I should have as a kid. Mm-hmm. But man, it is great. If you can check out Ender's Game, I would suggest you do it. And don't check out Astro Ball, because everything in it is a lie now.
They should just put out like a revised version that's one page mm-hmm. and just says, they cheated.
Well, they just won the World Series, and I'm assuming they didn't cheat while doing that. So they should just write the Astro Ball 2. We didn't cheat this time, you know, there with you that go. One. Yeah.
Right on. For me, it's a reread. I reread Mutations by Sam McPheeters, mm-hmm. who is a writer who used to be in a bunch of hardcore punk bands. And it's basically a bunch of essays about hardcore punk, but he's very, like, unflinching and unsentimental about it, but mm-hmm. also very good at, like, if you were going to explain it to somebody that didn't know anything about punk, he does a pretty good job of, like, explaining the minutia of it. And for me, who got into the scene a few years after he did, so it's like, some of the bands he talked about, like, I hadn't heard before, and I was like, oh, I'm going to check them out. And then it's like, ooh, that is a good band. I was like, oh, I like that band. So it's fun because he talks about, like, himself personally and a bunch of stuff he went through, but also the bands that were influential on him and influenced the scene. So I reread that last week, and it's just like, that's like chicken soup for
oh,
me.
Oh, yeah.
Just, like, getting into that.
That's everything you want that's in everything a book right there, yeah.
Exactly. Okay, going to keep it tight for this
okay.
round of fire.
Yeah.
Last question. At this point, mm-hmm. who wins the Stanley Cup?
This is difficult. Mm-hmm. Because every team has shown... I think every team in this round, maybe not the Panthers, but every other team has shown that they have the ability to do it. Mm. So it's really tough. I would have to say... I'm gonna say, and this might be crazy. I'm gonna say New York Rangers.
Okay. Yeah. I don't think that's crazy.
I think I'm gonna say the New York Rangers, despite the fact they just lost two in yep. their own building.
Yeah.
They're reeling a little bit. By the time we record this next podcast a week from now, they could have been bounced altogether. But I do think that the Rangers, there's just something there, man.
Yeah.
And I think you know Shesterkin gets it back and. All the way up. The Leafs are a second to that, though. I do think that there is something special about this team,
yeah.
but the Rangers, they're great.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to go kind of a similar tech.
Okay.
I'm going to say Carolina.
Ooh.
Even though they've had some adversity, it feels like there were spots where, like, is the goal thing going to be okay? And Antti Raanta's been great for them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, guys have stepped up. And I do think Toronto could fall to Carolina in the Eastern Final.
Man, we're making a lot of jumps on that one.
Like we're making so many jumps, yeah. but it's all speculative. So
exactly,
So I'm gonna stick with Carolina because I feel like out west, I'm still not sure.
Mm-hmm.
There feels like there's still a lot going on. I'm very surprised actually that the Dallas Minnesota series is 2-2 right now.
Really, we thought it was gonna be as tight as ever.
We did, but at the same time, I thought when it came down to it, Dallas would just be a little
kind of
better.
Pull away.
I mean, maybe the lack of Pavelski has mm-hmm. sort of turned things there. I'm not confident in the West right now in terms of who's going to come out of it. Not that I really was. It feels like the East has more leaders.
I find it interesting. None of us mentioned the Bruins.
It just feels like...
They're fallible.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
it's weird how this was far and away the best team in the league during yeah. the regular season. Like they had, I think it was like 20 more points than their next guy.
Yeah,
and they are statistically the best regular season team of all time. And yet, I do not lose a wink of sleep over the Bruins.
Yeah, it feels like once you get into it and like bad things can happen mm-hmm. at any time, then it's like. You get less sure.
Yes.
Yeah, but I do think they're obviously still a contender, but it's just, I don't like, it's not like bulletproof at this point.
Yeah, and did I choose the Rangers because I think, you know, the possibility of covering the Stanley Cup Final in New York in the middle of the summer is a lot of fun? Potentially, but we will have to see. But I do think that the Rangers, man, there's just something special. So, yeah. Anyway, great podcast. Thank you again to D.B. Sweeney for joining us. Watch any of the amazing movies he is in. And, yeah, we'll be back next week to potentially tee up the second round based on how these things are going. Yeah, thanks as always for listening and watching, and we'll be back next week.